Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Just Rugby NZ, where we'll talk about anything, as long as it's rugby. I'm Grant Harding, and with me to talk the talk is Rugby News magazine editor Campbell Burns. We start today with the All Blacks' win over England, obviously. Their third this season, and all by the skin of their teeth. There was a yellow card. There were too many penalties, including for tackling men off the ball and a deliberate knockdown, which kept England in the game at Twickenham. There were poor decision-making with ball. There was poor decision-making with ball in hand, which puts the All Blacks under pressure, and there were injuries. But there was redemption for two-try hero Mark Talia, who had been below par until this tour. Young loose forward Wallace Setiti's global reputation continued to grow. Scott Barrett's big engine began to rev, although the line-out calls need some work. And there were some timely interventions from the bench, including the goal-kicking kind from Damien McKenzie, which in the end won the game. But Campbell, we can't hide from the fact that the All Blacks got home 24-22 and take the Hillary Shield, thanks to the width of a goalpost, as they now contemplate Ireland with a six-day turnaround.
Yes, indeed. The All Blacks will be very, very happy that they managed to win that one. They had to work very hard for it. There was certainly effort there, but again, there wasn't the clinical accuracy we'd like to see. Happily, they did get some real impact off their bench. The likes of Damien McKenzie, Cam Roygaard, and particularly Patrick Tuipulotu. So there were plenty of positives there. A big last scrum to disrupt that England ball, to stop George Ford getting in a better position to try and attempt a drop goal. So, but it was tight, and really, you could almost say if England hadn't made that substitute with Marcus Smith, who'd kicked six from six, and they brought on George Ford, it may have been a different story, despite the fact that Smith missed a couple of bad drop goals. So England, again, they'll be gutted because they were so close, and the All Blacks weren't at 100%, but they found a way to win. So that was the main thing.
Well, there's irony there, isn't there? Because George Ford is a tremendous goal kicker, but he's been out for a month. Coming into that game, he hit the post and then couldn't get set up for a drop goal and missed it. I don't have a lot of sympathy for England. Sure, he missed the penalty goal, which took an age to take, I might add, and a drop goal at the end. Credit to the All Blacks scrum. Tossie, Tuangafasi and Amua, all the subs there on at that stage for denying him the first opportunity. And everyone is focused on the fact that George hasn't played for a month and what was he doing on the field. But I look at the fact that, you know, earlier in the game, their first two penalty goals, they had useful advantages, but in the shadow of the post, nobody looked really concerned when George Martin knocked on. And the second one, Marcus Smith had a horrible drop kick attempt. So England goes up in threes still. Until they change that mindset, they're going to be in a lot of arm wrestles.
Well, that's right. But and yet it was only sort of a matter of 7 or 8 months ago that we thought they'd turned over a new page with their expansive attacking rugby, which was good enough for them to beat Ireland in the Six Nations, and that was a pretty significant result. And then they played like that against France and nearly beat them, I think, a week later. Mm. They came to New Zealand and they didn't really hold true to those newfound attacking strategies. And once again, they never really threatened the All Blacks line. So they had the one try, which was sparked by the intercept by Marcus Smith. So that wasn't created, whereas the All Blacks certainly created three tries. So it was a funny old thing because England certainly brought a lot of line speed, but they almost reverted to type, and they thought that was going to be good enough to beat the All Blacks. It nearly was, but it was disappointing that their expansive mindset had been shelved for this one.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it's probably going to be forgotten, but Smith also had another horrible drop goal attempt right on half time. So, you know, you saw the attitude when Cunningham South smashed Vi in a tackle and Vi knocked on. I looked at the ball lying on the ground and thought, you know, there's an opportunity, but they were just standing there yelling and screaming and shouting and waiting for the scrum. And it's kind of like, well, you know, get the ball. There's an opportunity to take advantage there.
There was some cynical stuff from England, really. I mean, there was that cannonball tackle tackle by Ben Earl, for which I think he was penalised.
He was, yeah.
I've seen yellow cards awarded for that. Angus Gardner was quite lenient on them in that regard and certainly penalised the All Blacks much more heavily. But I've got to say, I've never seen a game where there's been so many tackles off the ball, tackles under suspicion. And it was remarkable that there was only, the only yellow card came late on Anton Leonard Brown for originally what was a what was an off-the-ball tackle, but ended up being for the accidental head clash.
Well, you're absolutely 100% correct. I mean, how was there just one yellow card? That was a no-arms tackle from Ben Earl. Caleb Clark, a deliberate knockdown. Several tackles off the ball by All Blacks, I've got to say.
That's right.
You know, and also the final penalty, tap penalty we took, from which Talia scored his second try. That was a cynical piece of play by the English to stop the move and was certainly deserving of a yellow card. So you're right, Angus Gardner was very lenient. A couple of All Blacks who did particularly well, Wallace Setiti and Mark Talia. Setiti's reputation globally is just growing. You know, that first try that Talia scored, he carried on the first phase and the fourth phase, at which stage he dragged in two outside back defenders and left Talia free to gas pass Alice Genge. And just memo to England, never put Genge in the defensive line. Think Will Jordan's try later in the half. What do you think?
No, well, that's right. Wallace Setiti, there's not many number sixes in the world who can who would be able to fire off an offload like that. It was just extraordinary to see him anyways. But we know his attacking X factor is there. He plays unlike what we know to be a big bruising number six. I mean, he's still a decent tackler, and I think he came through with 100% on his tackle sheet. But really, it's what he can do with the ball on hand, and that's why we think possibly number eight is going to be his position. He did well there against Japan the week before, but just continues to show out, and to have someone like that X factor, he's now probably certainly a blindside flanker for this to have jumped ahead of Summer Penny Finau, who was only given 3 minutes at the end, strangely. But it just goes to show you that they couldn't bring Setiti off. So he got through the full 80 and, you know, a man of the match display. So he goes from strength to strength.
Yeah, I mean, there was the one where he broke through and threw a slightly difficult pass for Vai, who knocked it on. But you know what? That would have gone to the TMO, that particular movement, because Beauden Barrett, in retreating, had kicked the ball across the field. It went forward and Setiti had picked it up in an offside position. And yeah, I'm sure the TMO would have picked that one up. But Mark Talia wasn't even supposed to be on the field when he scored his second try. It was only Beauden Barrett's head injury assessment that brought him back out there. It was a carbon copy of his effort against Japan, except on the other wing. But it's great to see him having found form. And a few weeks ago, I was suggesting he could probably go back to the NPC. And then I said he could probably stay at home and work on his game over the summer. And you suggested that the All Black selectors may just want to keep him in the camp and build him up again. And, you know, the confidence is there again.
Certainly is. Yeah, look, he's we've known that he's always very hard to contain in a very small space on down that right flank, as it was in this particular occasion. But he has played on the left wing as well. I was very surprised that he was subbed in the first place. I think Damien McKenzie came on for him at 60, and there was a reshuffle in the back line. But I thought, well, hang on, why would you bring this man off? He was more threatening. Not that Caleb Clark played that poorly, other than his deliberate knockdown, but there was certainly a case to keep him on the field, and you know, and he certainly did for that last try as well. That was another key moment, and once again, that was almost out of nothing. A nice last pass there from Damien McKenzie, and of course the first one set up by Setiti, but it was still two very good finishes from Talia. So I think he's now in the box seat for that number 14 jersey for the remaining three games, well, certainly the Ireland and France tests.
Sure. Look, the All Blacks, again, I felt struggled with execution. You know, there were moments where they broke out, and Ratama was too keen at an attacking ruck after, you know, Barrett had done a lovely chip and regather and then a kick ahead. Geordie Barrett ignored Will Jordan hitting space on the outside and went inside to Ratama at one stage. There was the Vi knock-on that we've spoken about. In the second half, promising attack, but it led to an intercept by England. And the wonderful Beauden Barrett no try, the Clark knocking the ball down, there was no argument with that. Amua Bust didn't connect with Roygaard. So a number of opportunities still left out there by the All Blacks.
Yeah, that's right. No, it certainly is a concern. I mean, Beauden Barrett was a real mixture. His kicking strategy was a bit strange. He did vary things up, but I think too often the ball was kicked away and then space wasn't created. This is where they miss Richie Mo'unga, who's a far better passer. He keeps the defence square when he takes it to the line. I'm not saying not putting all this on Beauden Barrett, because there just didn't seem to be that much clarity, even though he's playing inside his brother, Enrico Ioane, who are an established combination. But again, there was that you wondered about that clarity from the All Blacks. Funnily enough, they did get more clarity when McKenzie came on, went to 10, and just did good basic things. He kept the defence on us. The passes were in front, and it was almost as though they settled down a bit, and which we haven't seen a lot of this season in the last quarter. But there was a lot more nous, I guess. But overall, that attacking strategy, that's something Jason Holland has to look really hard at, because if I understand Barrett's out for this weekend against Ireland, so
yep.
Damien McKenzie is the man. He's back in there, and I think he offers better impact at the moment off the bench, but if he has to start at 10, he's going to have to run the cutter and do that well from the start.
And he's an experienced player, so we can trust in him. Look, it was a big day at the office for Asafa Amua, replacing Cody Taylor after about 3 minutes. He struggles with the long lineouts, I'll give you that, but he also was one of the offenders, tackling a player without the ball, which cost 3 points. But I thought he really brought a lot to this game with his bustling energy and bruising power.
Well, we certainly know he's dynamic on the carry. He does have to work on those lineouts, those long lineouts, but even the shorter ones. I think we lost at least 3, if not 4 lineouts, particularly in that second half. So that's going to be, Ireland will have noted that. Certainly Almir will start against Ireland. So this is probably his biggest start in Test rugby, which is coming up this weekend, against Ireland. So the blowtorch will go on him. I mean, do we hope that there's only 6 or 7 lineouts in the game and then hope he just throws it short, or do we trust him and say, work on it during the week and you're the man, and just continue doing what you're doing around the field with the rest of it? So that's the hope, because he's such a dynamic player. You just hope it, because if he can get that line out throwing right, imagine how good he can be.
Exactly. Look, final word on the England test. The haka doesn't win tests or lose them, but it is a tradition. Great theatre. Happy retirement, Joe Marler. Look, Cody Taylor and Beauden Barrett are out for the Ireland test on Saturday morning, just after 9 a.m. that kickoff. Still haven't heard about Anton Lennett-Brown's fate, but I would think he'll probably be okay. He'll need to be, because Billy Proctor, who I thought would be in contention, won't be, as he's heading home for the birth of his first child. Clearly, Amua and Damien McKenzie will step in, but I think there'll be a few other tweaks. I'm really thinking that Cam Roygaard and Patrick Tuipulotu will start ahead of Ratama and Vai, and Ethan de Groot will come back off the naughty chair ahead of Tamaiti Williams for a start.
I have to agree with that assessment. Well, the first thing is that Tupou Vai, I think, had a bit of a knee injury, so if he's in doubt, certainly Patrick Tuipulotu would come in, and he offered so much off the bench after a good display as captain against Japan. So the interesting one is that they brought Brady McAllister in as the third hooker to cover for Cody Taylor. Well, I would have thought Kurt Eklund would be more highly rated than Brady McAllister, although McAllister scored a try for the All Blacks 15 and didn't go that badly. But it's funny how the ratings of some of these hookers nationally. We know that Ricky Talley is crazily not rated in the top 6 hookers in the nation, when he certainly should be. And Kurt Eklund, the best NPC hooker, who wasn't even in the 23 against Munster for the All Blacks 15. I would bring him in as cover, but they've gone for McAllister, so we'll see how that pans out.
Could it be that Eklund, obviously, I think after the Bay of Plenty NPC final, they probably decide to play him against Georgia, and Bradley Slater had been with the All Blacks though as well. So could it be that McAllister was going to be the one who's going to miss out against Georgia, and he's just going there as cover for the All Blacks if there's an injury? I don't know, but yeah, you're right. It's very confusing, and it's must be incredibly difficult for the All Blacks 15 with these guys going in and out. Love's gone back, Harry Plummer's gone back to the All Blacks, Christian Leo Willey's already there, and Brady McAllister's there now as well. Look, I think the bench will get plenty of attention as well. I mean, George Bell, a lot of pressure's going to come on that young guy. His line-out throwing wasn't great in the Super Rugby Pacific. There'll be a contention around whether it's Williams or Tuanga Fasi on the bench. I'm sure that Vi will take his place on the bench naturally if Tuipulotu goes in. But what about the halfbacks? Would Perenara step up for this one? Perifeta's likely to come in and as the first five option, fullback option. Do you see any changes there?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd certainly like to see Roygaard start. I think he's probably the number one halfback now. He's had his fitness tests, as it were. His knees, his legs, obviously 100%. So I think he's the man to go in there. But certainly there's a case for TJ Perenara, particularly when Ireland will likely bring someone like Conor Murray off the bench with over 100 caps worth of experience. So, you know, I'm not sure whether it's certainly TJ Perenara is not the future, but he could well be in that number 21 jersey for the All Blacks. That wouldn't surprise me. Perifeta would certainly be the option to come onto the bench there. And I'm not sure what else they would necessarily do. Pasilio Tosi was good in that number 18 jersey. Came on, really made a good impact. Yep. Offa Tonga Fasi did well. And, you know, does he hold that 17 jersey ahead of Tama Iti Williams? Because I think Ethan de Groot has to come back in to try and combat Tag Furlong and that Irish scrum.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be a very interesting selection. Look, Campbell, this is a massive challenge on so many levels. Ireland are the world number one. The All Blacks knocked them out in the quarterfinal of the World Cup last year after they'd enjoyed considerable success against the All Blacks in the preceding years. They'd won five of the last nine clashes since their first victory in 2015. We know about Johnny Sexton and Rico Ioane, and Johnny's been in camp with the Irish, be racking them up, I guess. Since then, Ireland have won the Six Nations, although they had a hiccup losing to England, and squared a bruising series in South Africa with a late drop goal by Kieran Frawley, getting them home 25-24 in the second test. He actually kicked two and there was only one try in the entire match. But these guys are tough. Ireland have a 35-man squad for the autumn series. They're going to be captained by loose forward Caelan Dorris. He's the new captain. Led them to victory over South Africa in that test that we just talked about, and also once during the Six Nations. This is their first test of four. It looks like a case of the usual suspects, 18 of the 23 from the World Cup quarterfinal. Notable absences, the hooker, Sheehan, and Sexton, of course, who's retired. They've been training in Portugal, Campbell. Nice for some.
Yes, it is. I see they've had an interesting build-up, and of course there was no United Rugby Championship games on the weekend, so they would have had some extra time with their full squad there. The only one was Peter Omani, who played at blindside flanker for Munster against the All Blacks 15. That would have been a fitness test for him after his hamstring. So whether he comes back into that mix, perhaps off the bench for the All Blacks test. But there is a lot of continuity there. And take out Sexton and, as you say, Dan Sheehan. That's about it. It's a very good Irish side. And their skipper, very good footballer, can play equally well at 8 or 6, Caelan Dorris. And of course, they've got their Kiwi contingent, James Lowe, Bundy Aki, and Jemison Gibson Park. So, this is a very good Ireland side. They haven't played in nearly 4 months, of course, but I think that with the training they would have been doing under Andy Farrell, particularly in decent conditions in Portugal, will certainly benefit them. So, short turnaround for the All Blacks, some injury concerns. On and looking fresh, settled squad. So, big challenge ahead.
Very big challenge ahead. And, you know, they're a big forward pack, aren't they? They're a side who really like the confrontation. You know, they took on South Africa head on.
Well, that's right. And certainly at the breakdown, they'll be hoeing into the breakdown. They've got Josh van der Flyer, strong over the ball, good jackler. Caelan Dorris, as we mentioned, if Omani plays, we know how tough he is. He's a good line-out forward. So someone like Adi Savia, who was, I felt, slightly quiet on the weekend. I'm not saying he played poorly, but he didn't stand out as much. Here's the chance for Artie to really stand up against a really physical loose forward trio.
Yep, it's going to be a massive game, and Australian referee Nick Berry will have control of that in Dublin. You're listening to Just Rugby NZ with Grant Harding and Rugby News magazine editor Campbell Burns. The All Blacks 15, they had a tough assignment in their tour opener against Munster a little later on Sunday morning. And Campbell, I love this game because it reminded me of the touring days of the distant past when the All Blacks turned up, faced a fired-up team they knew very little about, a vociferous 30,000 crowd, variable refereeing, and they just had to stick at it. The All Blacks, as the commentators called the All Blacks 15, did just that with two tries in the last 5 minutes, sealing a 38-24 victory. I thought that was a very good win for a team coming together like they have.
what it was. And as you mentioned, it was certainly irritating for me to hear the commentators refer them as the All Blacks. So people may have been confused if they were tuning in Ireland. Certainly was not the All Blacks. It's New Zealand B, but there hasn't been a New Zealand B side officially since 1991, apparently. So, but look, that was a pretty decent effort, 38-24, considering there would have been some jet lag there. Some players still celebrating the Wellington Lions NPC victory only 7 days before. So they scored some very good tries. They weren't always clinical, which was unsurprising, but the likes of Locke, Fabian Holland played well. Harry Plummer at 10, Duplessis Kariffi, open side. Noah Hotham had a real impact off the bench, sparked one of the tries. And although this was far from full strength Munster, with most of their Ireland squad players out other than Omani, they certainly brought the fire and brimstone early. So, and they had to withstand, the All Blacks 15 had to withstand a fair bit of pressure there. As you say, some variable refereeing, and this Irish side looking to go to their line-out drive. So that was a good, really good hit out for the All Blacks 15, and some players played really well. We saw some good tries, I think, you know, well done to all involved for that performance overall.
I think that's exactly right. You know, they stood up and showed immense pride. And you know, the branding issue, the All Blacks 15, well, that's really on New Zealand rugby, to be honest with you. They've got All Blacks 15 on their shirt. Maybe New Zealand 15 would have solved that one, you know. But, you know, as you say, some really good stuff from this team. And, you know, Fabian Holland and Isaiah Walker-Leawerry, although he got a yellow card at one stage, I mean, they were a big engine room, I felt. And Kariffi, Haig and Flanders, excellent loose forwards, as was Corey Callow when he came off the bench. AJ Lamb, a lovely finish off Harry Plummer. Chafee Haki's try was a gem, featuring backs and forwards. Quinn Tupia, I thought, gave a fine performance. Scored a nice try off a Sean Stevenson cross kick. Kenny Naholo picked up another ripper, and you know, Plummer, he finished it off by running an intercept from long range. And Hotham, as you said, worthy of mention off the bench, as was Reuben Love. It was great to hear the commentators waxing lyrical about the team's stay in Limerick and the work they've done in the community. Good stuff to mate Clayton McMillan and your management and players. I was going to ask you what you thought of Reuben Love being loaned to the All Blacks 15, but now he's now back with the All Blacks, so there's absolutely no point in doing that. They now face a test match against Georgia at 2 a.m. on Monday in Montpellier, France, test in inverted commas, with Australian Jordan Way refereeing. He refereed the recent All Blacks-Japan clash. Georgia didn't go so well at the World Cup, but results were a little bit tough on them because they really pressured Australia and Fiji, but would have been disappointed with their loss to Wales and draw with Portugal. This year in the July window, they lost to Fiji. I think that was in Georgia. They beat Japan in Japan and lost to Australia 40-29 in Sydney in an excellent match. They have strong forwards, plenty of pace in the backs, Campbell.
Yeah, that's right. No, I think it'll be a really good test for the All Blacks 15 on neutral territory in Montpellier. I'd like to see, given that the All Blacks are playing about 48 hours before that game, I'd like to see all their reinforcements go back. So someone like Peter Luckey, if he's not involved in the 23 for the Ireland test, which is quite possible, I'd like to see him go back, even if he's coming off the bench. And some of those other guys, I mean, Reuben Love needs game time. I suspect he'll be perhaps starting that Italy test in Turin.
Yeah.
But it'd be nice to see him start on Monday. And so I'm sure there's going to be back and forth and with players and any injury concerns coming out of that Ireland test. But Clayton McMillan, I'm sure is just rolling with the punches. You know, he knows what this team's about. It's subservient to the All Blacks. There's a few others. I mean, Brodie McAllister, there's no reason why he couldn't come back and sit on the bench for the All Blacks 15 if he's not required on the Friday night in Dublin. So yeah, there's a few selection permutations around that, but guys like Noah Hotham, who has played for the All Blacks this year, certainly enhanced his reputation. AJ Lamb played well at centre, where he did often for the Blues this year. So is he a future midfielder as opposed to a wing?
I think
some interesting Yeah, some interesting pointers coming out of this team.
Yeah, of the 29 on tour, obviously six have yet to play. Kurt Eklund, Saula Ma'u, tour replacements Simon Parker and Caleb Delaney. Yes, they did arrive last Wednesday. Backs Riley Higgins and Dallas McLeod. So some of them will probably figure in the mix for the Georgia game, I would think, especially Higgins, McLeod and Eklund, I think, pretty strong contenders there. The All Blacks are still waiting on the fitness of Ethan Blackadder and Dalton Papa. Well, as I said last week, Duplessis Corifi would be a fitting replacement if they didn't, if they didn't make it back. It's not the size of the dog in the fight; it's the size of the fight in the dog, as Mark Twain famously wrote. Just while we're on the All Blacks 15, a former All Blacks 15 player, hooker Tyrone Thompson, has announced he's off to the NRL. Personally, I'm pretty sad to see him go to the Newcastle Knights, where his twin brother Leo plays, because at 24, he still has a lot of upside. He's done well with Wellington, Hawke's Bay, the Chiefs, New Zealand Maori, in the All Blacks 15. So a bit of a loss for New Zealand rugby there, Campbell.
I'd say so, yes. Look, I think he only started one game for the Chiefs this year. He was sort of the third string hooker, and I don't think he started a lot for the Hawke's Bay Magpies in the NPC, but certainly at his best, a dynamic player, strong ball runner, big muscular guy, so good scrummager, good at his core task. So this is a bit of a loss. Obviously, looking to join his brother over in the NRL. We don't see a lot of top-rated New Zealand rugby players going to the NRL now. It's more, the perhaps the fringe players, the William Warbrooks of this world, who've gone from the Sevens. So it's not that big a I wouldn't say not big a deal. It is a big deal, but we don't see a lot of that. It's more they seem to grab them when they're younger, almost at first of teenage at the NRL.
Yeah, and of course Moses Leo is going at the end of the 2025 season. So the other national side in action this week, the New Zealand Heartland 15, unfortunately suffered defeats to a New Zealand Murray 15, 47-14, and New Zealand Barbarians 40-21. Still a great way for those players to wrap up their season. Only one other test on Sunday morning, Scotland hammering the Pacific Nations Cup-winning Fiji, 57-15. The Fijians running into yellow card trouble early, and Scotland's winger Darcy Graham scoring four of his team's eight tries. Look, it's a massive weekend coming up in the Northern Hemisphere Autumn Series, kicking into full gear now. The All Blacks against Ireland on Saturday morning at 9:10 a.m. Then on Sunday morning it will be England against Australia, with New Zealand referee Ben O'Keefe in charge. And I can tell you that the last time a New Zealand referee, well, not the last time, I might be wrong on that, but when they did the Grand Slam in 1984, Bob Francis of Masterton was in charge of the England-Australia match, which was also the first of their Grand Slam legs. Paul Williams, assistant referee in that match, and Glenn Newman as the TMO. Italy against Argentina. France taking on Japan, with James Dolman on an assistant referee and Richard Kelly the TMO. Then on Monday morning, New Zealand time, Wales host Fiji. Scotland take on South Africa. Which ones are you looking forward to the most?
Yeah, there's a whole lot of good footy going. Probably England-Australia to see how far the Australians have actually come. England, you think, will be better for having this match under their belt, and indeed, of course, this is the actual the official start of the international window. So that Wales Fiji test takes a whole different tenor, if you like, because Fiji really had only access to their Intrua and NPC players.
Good point.
For that match last week. So they'll be a very much different proposition. And Warren Gatland, in fact, they may even go in as underdogs, Wales, at home to Fiji, who have beaten them before at home. So that's going to be an interesting watch. But that England-Australia game for mine, other than the All Blacks, of course, on Saturday morning. So there's several games that sort of have an interesting aspect to them, particularly around world rankings, where sides are, who's coming in with all their top players, because for 3 weeks we get to see technically full strength sides. So how they go will be interesting.
Look, Campbell, just quickly, briefly, can you sum up how you think the test is going to go between the All Blacks and Ireland?
Well, I'd love to know. There's all these variables, particularly around injuries to the All Blacks, perhaps Anton Leonard-Brown with suspension, who's coming in, who's coming out, but it looks like Damien McKenzie is going to be at 10, so that could be the actual key to the game. If he can really stand up and just give a really authoritative performance, and particularly around his kicking game, that could sway things. But the All Blacks are going to have a hell of a challenge in the loose and the tight to try and match this Irish side. So I'm picking a very, very tight test match, and it wouldn't surprise me if the All Blacks lost, But equally, it wouldn't surprise me if they won. So, yep, very, very tight game, and it may just swing on a late momentum shift or goal kicking. And, of course, if that's the case, Damien McKenzie, he's goal kicked pretty well most of the year, and we saw that kick from the sideline last week. So there's a lot on D-Mac's shoulders, but, you know, this could be the moment for him.
Yeah, it's going to be an incredible clash, and that was brilliant fence sitting by you there, I thought. on behalf of Rugby News magazine editor Campbell Burns, I'm Grant Harding. This is Just Rugby NZ. Catch you next week.